up in Columbus, Ohio. There's a seminary, a Catholic seminary, and it has a motto. All these places have mottos, and they're always in Latin, you know. It's fine. The one for the seminary up there, the seminary is the Josephinum. And the motto is, Si Deus pro nobis, quis contra nos? Which is, if God is for us, who can be against us? What we heard in our second reading this evening. But apparently, and this is, who knows, this might be an apocryphal story, but sounds true enough. Apparently, one of the visiting bishops was up there and asked one of the seminarians, because he's wearing a shirt that has the motto on it. So he asked him, so how do you translate that? And the seminarian said, if God is for us, why is he against us? Which is exactly how it seems sometimes. You know, it depends on how you look at it, I guess. And in general, if we were to sum up our readings for this second Sunday in Advent, it's an eye examination. It's what do you see? What do you see when you look at your own life at this point where you're at? How do you see the significance of the time you have left or the time you've spent? How do you see how the Lord has actually been engaged in, or how you've allowed the Lord in to your life? Lent is often a time for a certain eye examination. In our first reading, what do you think Abraham saw in the Lord's promise and then the Lord's command? The Lord commands him to take his only son and to lead him up and to offer him. What was it that Abraham was seeing? And we could ask ourselves, what do we hear and what do we see in this command? Is it simply blind obedience? Do we see an unreasonable command on God's part? Do we see a theological problem, a stumbling block for us? What kind of God would ask this of Abraham and Sarah? So when you hear that reading, what do you see? My answer, or my way of approaching that, and I think it's on fairly solid ground, is both the Lord's test is one of obedience, but it's the obedience Abraham needed to see, not God. Abraham lived in the midst of a culture, in the midst of peoples who were very used to child sacrifice. If you were founding a city and you needed to put in a new gate, they would sacrifice a child there on the spot where the gate would be. So they lived, Abraham lived in a culture in which sacrificing your firstborn, if you wanted a powerful God to protect, to guide, to be your God, it was perfectly reasonable to give your firstborn, to sacrifice a child for that. So what does God see and what does Abraham see? God sees Abraham as the kind of person who expects God to demand something like this. Because if you're a powerful God, you demand powerful sacrifices. So God says, okay, Abraham, I see how your heart is. I see how your mind is. I'm the kind of God that can ask that of you. But I'm also the kind of God, the real God, who will actually supply the sacrifice. So at the moment that you say yes, that you're willing, I'm stepping in and saying, but I will. I'm the God who does not ask this of anyone. The other gods that these people worship, they ask that of them, and they are false gods. The true God supplies the ram. But because you were willing, and because you listened, I will fulfill the promise, and you will walk in faith, and you will be the father of faith. It's interesting that the hill that it speaks of is the same hill where our Lord was crucified a couple thousand years later. So on the very hill in which he led up Isaac, that's where God supplied the sacrifice. The God went to the altar, was crucified, and then was raised, because God said, I am not a God of death. So when we hear in our gospel today, this great scene of the transfiguration, it's again about what do they see? How well do they see? Because our Lord takes them up and he says to them, do not tell anyone what you've seen. They looked around, they no longer saw anyone but Jesus alone. They see the transfiguration of the Lord, they see the glory that God actually is, and it's in preparation so that when they see the crucifixion, when they see the darkness, when they see death, what they will actually see is the Lord working his glory, working his will, working his salvation in the world. Now, do they see that? No. They flee. They don't remain. And so the Lord tells them, he charged them not to relate what they had seen to anyone except when the Son of Man had risen from the dead. Because until they had seen the Lord risen, they did not know what they had seen at the crucifixion. They did not know what they had seen in their own denial, in their fear, in their fleeing. Their vision is clarified, and they can see both their past and their future when they've seen it in the light of the resurrection. So our charge, our task this evening, how much of your life do you see in the light of the resurrection? How much of your own sense of the crosses that you bear, the troubles that you've carried, the problems in the world, the problems in your life, the tensions in your family, how much of all that do you see in the light of the resurrection? Meaning the Lord promises life where there is death, and if I walk with the Lord, there will in fact be life, even if everybody else sees death, sees the grave, sees the tomb. We are Christians. We see everything, or we're supposed to, in the light of the resurrection, especially our own crosses. I had the opportunity at one point to travel to Venezuela, give a retreat to some of Mother Teresa's sisters. And these particular sisters in this house, they cared for about 70 women who were all in various stages of dementia or other mental handicaps. They were from the ages of basically 13 to 80. It's a very rough place. It's a very poor neighborhood. The building that all these women slept in was basically an outdoor shelter with screens. And it was hard. You could see that it was difficult to care for them. But I walked into that compound, which was surrounded by a wall with concertina wire and broken glass on it to keep people out. I stepped into that compound and looked at what was there. And I realized I'm looking at people who get into heaven. They're in. There's nothing that's going to keep them out. They're loved by God. They have nothing in this life. And they're not going to enjoy life in any way that we would say, that's how you value life, that's what life is about. quality of life. But what I saw was the saints. And I envied them for that. I didn't envy them for their life and its difficulties. But I did realize they're already in. And I've got to work hard to get there. So when we walk the earth, walk the street, what do we see? Who do we see? How do we see them? There's the poor, there's the indigent, there's the mentally disabled, there's those who have borne heavy crosses that have crushed their life, stolen the spirit out of them, and are in misery. We don't have to, in a sense, say, blessed are they. But we do have to see them in the light of the Lord's call to us to be His presence to them and to announce the good news as much as we can to them. We are the ones who have seen the resurrection. And the Lord has said, do not relate what you have seen to anyone except when the Son of Man is risen from the dead. So it is time to relate to others. The God that we know, the God that gives us the vision to see Him in the world, and to speak that vision, to speak what we see into the world.